cream.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Today, Dan Friedel tells us about college basketball in the U.S. Katie Weaver talks about the computer chip industry. I will return with words and their stories. We will end our 30 minutes together with The Making of a Nation, our ongoing U.S. history program. But first, the education report.
The American college basketball tournaments, known as March Madness, look a little different than they used to. There are very few fans watching the games in person. The players stay in safe areas called bubbles in the states of Texas and Indiana. But at least the games are happening. Last year, the tournaments were just about to start when the United States closed all public events to stop the spread of COVID-19. The college tournaments include over 60 teams made up of college students. There is a tournament for men and a tournament for women. In U.S. cities with large colleges and universities, people would go out to eat, drink, and watch the games on television. When the tournaments were canceled last year, students were also sent home. Some students have yet to return to campus. Others came back to a very different college life in autumn. They needed to stay apart from each other. They took classes by video call. They could not spend time with friends or eat in large dining rooms. Colleges, like the rest of the country, were trying to stop the spread of the virus that causes COVID-19. Group activities are a big part of the college experience. And students whose universities had good basketball teams in 2020 lost out on one of those experiences, cheering for their schoolmates in the tournaments. Shane Hoffman saw this at the University of Oregon. He is a sports writer for the Daily Emerald, the student newspaper. He said last year, the Oregon women's basketball team might have won the tournament. Three Oregon players were among the first eight players chosen by the professional teams of the WNBA, including Sabrina Ionescu, the first pick. Hoffman called it a huge bummer to see the college basketball tournaments canceled.
It did seem, very, very gloomy. I think people realized that that was the last time they were able to see that phenomenal Oregon team, which is probably going to go down as one of the best ever.
This spring, things are a little less gloomy for Max Witte, a student at Syracuse University in central New York. Witte said watching the games on television was a fun activity for students and others.
It gives us a sense of maybe we are getting back to normal. Maybe one day we can have that big game. Maybe one day we'll be able to sit and watch it with a huge crowd in the dome. Who knows?
Syracuse recently lost to the University of Houston to end its season. But for a couple of weeks, Witte said being able to watch the games with a small group of friends was a pick-me-up after a difficult year. Thomas Colley is in his second year at the University of Alabama. The school in the city of Tuscaloosa is known for its winning football team and the 100,000 fans at the games. Colley said he missed attending football games last year. With COVID-19 restrictions, very few were permitted at the games, and he could not get in. Life in Tuscaloosa has also been different compared to 2020. Streets in the city have been filled with fans watching games as the state removed gathering limits. In his fraternity house, Colley has been watching sports events with as many as 25 friends.
Now, like, actually being able to gather and watch the basketball games without fear of how many rules we're breaking, that's really cool, because you're not sitting in constant fear about the cops coming and kicking everyone out in the middle of a game or something like that.
I'm Dan Friedel.
And now, here is a story from Katie Weaver.
A computer chip shortage has left several manufacturing industries struggling. Makers of products such as video game consoles, smartphones, and cars are among those affected. Computer chips are small devices that contain electrical circuits and are used in computers and other electronics. The shortage began in December. At that time, many manufacturers misjudged demand for products like laptop computers and smartphones. Sales for these internet devices sharply increased during the coronavirus health crisis. Whirlpool is an international company based in the United States. It is one of the world's largest manufacturers of home products, like ovens and refrigerators. Whirlpool China chief, Jason Ai, said the company's exports from China to Europe and the United States have decreased by as much as 25%. In recent months. Whirlpool cannot get enough microcontrollers, simple chips used in over half of its products. I said the company is struggling to meet the demand for appliances while trying to fill an explosion of export orders. It's a perfect storm, he said. Other manufacturers are also struggling because of the chip shortage. Hangzhou Robam Appliances Company Limited is a Chinese home goods maker. It had to delay the release of a new stove part by 4 months because it could not get enough microcontrollers. Dan Ye is the company's marketing director. He said many of its products are built for high-technology homes. So, of course, we need a lot of chips. With the shortage, companies are now having to compete to buy remaining chips to secure their own supplies. Ye said that it is easier for the company to find chips in China than in other countries. Domestic chips can satisfy our needs completely, he said. To deal with the shortage of microprocessors and memory chips, Dream Technology cut its budget and hired extra employees just to communicate with chip suppliers. The company makes vacuum cleaners. Dream has also been forced to test chips that could serve as alternatives to the ones it normally uses. Marketing Director Frank Wang said Dream also is investing in some computer chip suppliers. We are working to have deeper control of our suppliers, he said. I'm Katie Weaver.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Some people get great joy and satisfaction from doing things by themselves. That is why DIY or do-it-yourself projects are so popular. Such projects became even more popular during the coronavirus health crisis. Another activity became popular: baking. I am not talking about opening a box of cake mix, stirring in some water, and baking it in the oven. I'm sure that it would still taste good, but it would not be completely homemade. You used a cake mix you bought at the store. In other words, you did not make the cake from scratch. That is the expression we are going to talk about today. From scratch. Let's continue with another baking example. I love to make bread from scratch. I measure out the flour, salt, sugar, and yeast. I add some water and then knead the mixture into dough, which is the word for uncooked bread. It is so much fun. And in my opinion, making it from scratch creates the tastiest bread. To create something from scratch is to make it without any ready-made ingredients or materials. Let's say you want to build a greenhouse for your plants. You could buy one, but it might cost a lot of money. So you decide to build it from scratch. You build it from the ground up with the most basic materials. Starting from scratch can also mean starting something over from the beginning. For example, a group of people want to start a reading program for children. But after hours and hours of planning, they have not decided anything. They thought of many good ideas, but those ideas do not seem to work well together, and the heart of the project has been lost. So someone suggests, "Hey, why don't we start from scratch and simplify our ideas?" Starting from scratch is often the only way to move forward once a project gets really complex. You can start many things from scratch, from a reading program to your career. If you start your career from scratch, you start over and do something new. After many years of being a lawyer, my friend started her career over from scratch and became a video game developer. Or you could continue the same career, but in a new way, or in a new place. Here's another example. A friend of mine wanted to restart his singing career. He was living in Chicago, but did not find success there. So he moved to Pittsburgh and started his singing career over from scratch. It seems to have worked because he is doing really well in that city. Some word experts say the expression, from scratch, comes from foot races. The scratch used to mean the line scratched in the ground as the starting line for the race. All the runners would begin with their toes on the scratched line. The term also is used in cricket and boxing. In fact, it may have been used in those sports first. Experts often do not agree on word origins. But don't let that stop you from using from scratch. Use the expression the next time you talk about doing something yourself or starting something from the beginning. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Embers. Ronald Reagan was finishing his second term. He was America's 40th president and one of the most popular. During his 8 years in office, many Americans did well financially. Many felt more secure about the future of the nation and the world. The possibility of nuclear war with the Soviet Union did not seem as great a threat as it had in the past. The Constitution limits presidents to 2 terms. So in 1988, the country prepared to elect a new chief executive. There were 3 main candidates for the Republican Party nomination. They were George Herbert Walker Bush, Bob Dole, and Pat Robertson. Bush had just served 8 years as Reagan's vice president. Dole was the top Republican in the Senate. Robertson was a conservative Christian who had his own television program. Ronald Reagan's popularity helped George Bush gain the Republican nomination. Neither Dole nor Robertson won enough votes in the primary election season to be a threat. Bush was nominated on the first vote at the party convention. The delegates accepted his choice for Vice President, Senator Dan Quayle of Indiana. 8 candidates competed for the nomination of the Democratic Party. One of the candidates was Jesse Jackson, a black minister and political activist. He won about 25% of the delegates. He had also sought the nomination 4 years earlier. The Democrats chose Michael Dukakis, the governor of Massachusetts. His running mate was Senator Lloyd Benson of Texas. In public opinion surveys, Dukakis looked like a strong candidate after the party conventions. But then he began to lose popularity. Many observers said he had waited too long to launch a nationwide campaign. The candidates heavily attacked each other through campaign advertising on television. Dukakis came under attack from the Bush campaign, targeting his record as governor. Campaign ads said Dukakis had not been tough enough with criminals.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Ads by the Bush campaign also said Dukakis would weaken America's military power. And they accused him of not protecting the environment by seeking a permit to dump sewage from Massachusetts off the coast of New Jersey.
The Environmental Protection Agency called Boston Harbor one of the dirtiest harbors in America. But not long ago, Governor Dukakis proposed a way to help clean it up by dumping Massachusetts sewage sludge off the New Jersey shore, just 106 miles from New York. Now Michael Dukakis says he wants to do for America what he's done for Massachusetts. New Jersey can't afford to take that risk.
I'm fed up with it. Never seen anything like it in 25 years of public life.
Dukakis fought back.
George Bush's negative TV ads, distorting my record, full of lies, and he knows it.
Dukakis accused Bush of not telling the truth about his part in the secret sales of arms to Iran to finance Contra rebels in Nicaragua. He also criticized Bush for being part of an administration that reduced social programs.
I must have been living through a different 8 years than the one that the vice president's been living through, because this administration has cut and slashed and cut and slashed programs for children, for nutrition, for the kinds of things that can help these youngsters to live better lives. Has cut federal aid to education, has cut Pell Grants and loans to close the door to college opportunity on youngsters all over this country. And that, too, is a major difference between the vice president and me.
In the end, Bush's campaign succeeded in making Dukakis look weak on crime and defense. Dukakis did not help himself with a commercial in which he was looking out of a moving tank while wearing a large helmet. Many people made fun of the ad. On Election Day in November, Bush defeated Dukakis by almost 7 million votes. George Bush was sworn into office on January 20th, 1989.
No president, no government can teach us to remember what is best in what we are. But if the man you have chosen to lead this government can help make a difference, if he can celebrate the quieter, deeper successes that are made not of gold and silk, but of better hearts and finer souls, if he can do these things, then he must. We as a people have such a purpose today. It is to make kinder the face of the nation and gentler the face of the world. My friends, we have work to do.
George Bush was the son of a United States senator and had led a life of public service. He joined the Navy when America entered World War II. He flew attack planes. He was just 18 years old, at that time the youngest pilot the Navy ever had. He flew many bombing raids against the Japanese in the Pacific. He was shot down once and rescued by an American submarine. George Bush came home from the war as a hero. He became a university student and got married. He and his wife, Barbara, then moved to Texas, where he worked in the oil business. He ran for the United States Senate in 1964 and lost. 2 years later, he was elected to the House of Representatives. He ran for the Senate again in 1970 and lost again. But by that time, he had gained wider recognition. Over the next 8 years, he was appointed to a series of government positions. He was ambassador to the United Nations. He was chairman of the Republican National Committee. He was America's representative in China before the two countries had diplomatic relations. And he was head of the Central Intelligence Agency.
In 1980, Bush ran against Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination for president. Bush lost, but became Reagan's running mate. After two terms as vice president, he felt ready to lead the nation himself. The new president took seven foreign trips during his first year in office. In Europe, Bush met with the other leaders of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. He proposed a major agreement on reducing troops and non-nuclear weapons in Europe. The Soviet Union considered his proposal an important step in the right direction. In June of 1989, the Chinese government sent tanks and troops to crush pro-democracy protests in Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Hundreds and perhaps thousands of demonstrators were killed. President Bush took some steps against China, but many critics felt the sanctions were not strong enough. In Central and Eastern Europe, communist governments also faced protests. Since 1987, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev had let countries in the Warsaw Pact experiment with political and economic reforms. But those reforms were not enough to stop the fall of communist governments in one country after another. In the summer of 1989, President Bush visited Hungary and Poland. Both nations were trying to develop free market economies. Both were suffering as they moved away from central control.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
In Poland, the leader of the Solidarity Trade Union, Lech Wałęsa, led the push for reform. He would later become president of a democratic Poland.
Hier ist das erste deutsche Fernsehen mit der Tagesschau.
November of 1989 brought a dramatic expression of the changes taking place in Eastern Europe.
Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren.
On November 9th, East Germany opened the wall that had divided it from the West since 1961.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings. Reporting tonight from Berlin.
From the Berlin Wall specifically, take a look at them. They've been there since last night. They are here in the thousands. They are here in the tens of thousands. Occasionally they shout, Die Mauer muss weg, the wall must go. Thousands and thousands of West Germans come to make the point that the wall has suddenly become irrelevant. Something, as you can see, almost a party on. How do you measure such an astonishing moment in history? The East German government said tonight they were going to make more openings in the wall, at least a dozen more, put bulldozers right through the wall so that more people could cross to the West. The East German communist leadership tonight said there'd be a new election law guaranteeing secret elections which the rest of the world could monitor. And only 24 hours after East Germans were told they could go anywhere, anytime, the Soviet Union said, that was a sensible move.
Within days, citizens and soldiers began tearing down the wall as the world watched with hope for a new era of peace.
Now, what's it feel like to be standing on top of the wall?
Incredible for me. It's I can't describe really my feelings. It's something unreal for me.
If there is someone who sleeps for 8 weeks and you told him what happened here, he thinks you're crazy. It's unthinkable. Put my number.
And And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.